We want the person that has the 64 Studebaker Daytona or the 69 and a half Javelin that wants ultimate street car handling and performance, but there really kind of isn't the bolt-on part for, and they really want a purpose-built car. We want to attract those customers where we can provide the same handling and quality, but in a car that maybe that unique car, so that although we both like the 69 Firebirds and the 67 Chevelles and the 71, you know, AR Cudas, but there's those other standout cars that you want to go to a show. Yeah, you want your car to handle well, you want it to go fast and perform well in the corners. But maybe in the car show aspect, you don't want one of the mainstream cars. You want that
right. That
car that's lower and is a unique brand.
Well, a unique brand, and you know, there's I love the fact, I truly do. I love the fact that you can build a 69 Camaro or a 65 Mustang out of a catalog. And I'm not just talking about sheet metal stuff. You can build that car out of a catalog. It's like Jeep and J.C. Whitney. It's a wonderful thing for the industry and the hobby that's available. But I also love the fact that in the 60s, 50s and 60s in particular, and that's kind of the era that I grew up in, vehicles are instantly recognizable. And things like the Valiant and the GTO, people know what those cars are, and there's individuality and personality that people read and are infused into the designs of those vehicles. And it's important to pay homage to these wonderful designs back in a day when everything wasn't shaped like an M&M or an egg. And you know,
right on. Well, when we decided, Chad and I had talked about starting a racing division to focus more on the race cars when we were contracted to build the GTO-R. And at the time, we just didn't know how the market was going to react to all that because, you know, the Ultimate Streetcar Invitational had only been going for a couple of years. Although the Pro Touring cars were around, they were still kind of a new thing. And, of course, today the industry, the manufacturing industry, reacts much faster to market demand for new parts than it did previously. You know, the internet has allowed everyone to view many more events and races and see what's trending more across the country in a faster manner than with printed magazines did.
And yeah, absolutely agree.
So at the time, the discussion was there, but we felt that we wanted to see where it was going to go. And the day at Columbus last year that we really kind of got smacked in the face and said, you know, realized that the autocross and the challenge races and the Optima face-offs, those were all growing at a pace that was very quick. Mm-hmm. And so we made the decision to do that, to create a division of our company that would do nothing but race cars. And so in tossing around names, you know, what to call it, we wanted to identify with the Hot Rod Chassis brand and get people to think the way we did with that branding. You know, if you look at the Hot Rod Chassis logo, it evokes an aircraft feel from a past time. And we wanted people to feel that about traditional hot rods. You know, a lot of the traditional hot rodders back in the original days were all aircraft guys.
Yeah.
You know, from the manufacturing plant. So they used a lot of that technology in making the speed parts or building their chassis or how the cars were put together. And so in the conversations, we said, well, why don't we call it Skunk Works? Because we want people to identify with Lockheed Skunk Works. You know, Lockheed Skunk Works, and you think about them, they make all the stealth planes, and they have all the futuristic technology today. And it's as we like to say, ultimate technology today. So
yeah, Skunkworks has its own identity as a pop culture phrase, anyways, and it connotates like a secret development shop that's kicking out high tech stuff. At least that's what it means to me. So I think it's an awesome name, especially for the level of craftsmanship that you guys demonstrate.
And it fit because you know the racing division was kind of our best kept secret.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, cool. take the 67 Chevelle we're building with our original parts group. There aren't really, you know, Bang Shift is covering it, and there's not a ton of articles about it yet. But that car, when people see it, it will look like a 67 Chevelle Trans Am car. But when you start reading the list of components that are in the car, you know, it's getting the LSX 454 with a Hillborn stack injector with a Moroso dry sump system. That's their very new double rotor dry sump system. And if you're ever at a show with one of their booths and you go over and take your hand and turn one of the original style dry sump pumps and turn one of the new double rotor dry sump pumps, you can feel the torque difference that it takes to turn it is just unbelievably different. It's so easy to turn the new one. It's obvious the parasitic loss is going to be a lot less. And then, you know, you come back to the transmission. It's a Tremec TKO, or I'm sorry, a Tremec Magnum T56. But the difference between the one you can get off the shelf and the one that's going in the Chevelle is the one that's going in the Chevelle is the same Magnum T56, the sequentially shifted version that's in all of the Rolex race cars.
Oh, wow.
You know, that's pretty top of the line. You know, the retail on the transmission is above $20,000. And I'm not saying that to make it sound like we're using some kind of really expensive, impressive part. It's to make people understand that the technology that's in this sequentially shifted six-speed is right from Rolex Racing.
Yeah. Well, then obviously the rest of the components on the vehicle rise to match that level. So it's got to be an outstanding car from every aspect.
Oh yeah, we've already gone through the R&D and we're in the manufacturing end of it now. We're coming out with our own independent rear suspension that is not an evolved double A arm suspension. It's a new design that we're calling the Interceptor that. I think is really going to make people think about independent rear suspensions in a different manner, and the Chevelle will have that in it. So we have a surprise for the front suspension that we're keeping a secret until about a week before SEMA this year. But the whole car is nothing but modern technology that's the very best the industry can offer throughout the entire vehicle.
Now, is this Chevelle going to be displayed at SEMA?
It will. It'll be in the original parts group booth. And
great, because the Eastwood crew and me, we're doing a hands-on cars episode out there, as well as just getting tons of cool video. We will come and find you guys wherever you are. Let's stay in touch. I definitely want to see this car. I want to smoke it over, and I want to talk to you about it and get a nice interview with you guys on our little web show and show our viewers and listeners some details about this car. Hopefully we can make that happen, guys.
Now we'll have three cars at SEMA this year. We'll have the Whistling Death Chevelle, the Violent Valiant, and a new build that we're just starting is a 65 Comet that we're building for Craftsman Tools.
Very cool. Yeah, I love the old Comets. You can tell what they are. And, you know, it wasn't a Fairlane. It wasn't even like a rebodied anything else. They were unique. And I can't wait to see that, too. Now, I don't know whether it was Kevin or Chad that said something about, you know, the old hot rodders from back in the day were, you know, Air Force guys. And a lot of that borrowed technology, you know, came from the military and came from the Air Force. And guys like Vic Edelbrock Sr. were, you know, had this ball of energy they had to burn up from, you know, from combat duty and the legends of all of that stuff translating into what we know as hot rodding today, which is – that's the founding fathers of all that stuff. But I've got a buddy that he served two terms in the Navy, and he served on carriers. And what he did was aircraft maintenance on deck and in some of the hangars, and I can't quote you the names of the carriers that he served on, but obviously with two terms, his experience with maintenance, and it wasn't design, it wasn't construction, but it was simple maintenance. The things I learned from Kevin Reynolds about dealing with aluminum, corrosion aspects of it, fabrication, field fixes, all those types of things. You can't get that experience in just working on cars. So, you know, first of all, Kevin, thank you for your service in the Air Force. But I wanted to ask you specifically, how much of the skills that you picked up in your tenure in the Air Force have translated to you building building hot rods?
Oh, a lot, and almost, you know, almost all of it directly. You know, I was the last 4 years I was in, I was an aircraft fabricator, and so I dealt with superstructure things and machining parts and welding pretty much any type of metal. We specifically did a lot of titanium and stainless steel and aluminum welding and chrome moly, and you know, if you think about it. With the exception of the titanium, and that's used widely on really high-end race cars, all of those things are skills that you use in building any kind of car, whether it be a tube chassis off-road vehicle or a Pro Mod or a Trans Am style race car or a hot rod.
Yeah.
If you look at one of our chassis on our website, all of our chassis are purpose-built. Purposely designed and built for the parameters of your hot rod, and that they aren't inexpensive, but when you get the car, I always like to say, why are you going to build a $30,000 800 horsepower blown Hemi and put it in a $3,000 chassis that's going to do nothing but be a pretzel when you're done with it?
Exactly. Yeah.
And we specifically look for, and we're not trying to exclude other craftsmen, but we specifically look for aircraft people from the Air Force and the Navy to work in our shop. We currently have another Air Force and Afghanistan veteran, Keith Grashorn, who was a MH-60 Pavlo crew chief, and he does sheet metal work for us, but he's also our chief of final assembly. And the level of detail that you're held to in working on a military aircraft, and I don't want to scare people flying on civilian airplanes, but it makes me nervous flying on civilian airplanes. the requirements that you're held to, the standards, I should say, that you're held to when working on a military aircraft, we do everything in our power to translate that into a car that you bring to us from inception all the way through final assembly and testing. We have a big, long sheet of how we test every vehicle. And ultimately, we do everything from checking the electrical system and the cooling system and the fuel system and the hydraulics and the brakes. We test all of those things meticulously, all the way up to the same thing the military does with a fighter plane. They go out, pound on it, pull, you know, 6G turns and do combat landings to evaluate the landing gear. Well, you know, when your car is all done, if it's a straight-line car, we take it out to the track, and I drop the hammer on it as hard as I can. And if I break it, I fix it. But if it's if it passed the severe part of our evaluations, then we feel confident that we can hand you your car, and if you want to take it to the drag strip and pound on it, you can do that reliably or without worry of breaking a component and having to take it home. Now, we're not saying that there isn't the Monday, Friday part out of the box that you can't, you know, it'll last for a few times and then break. That happens in any industry, but we do our best to make sure that doesn't happen, and all of our parts suppliers know that, you know, the components that we want from their company, we need to be able to stand behind too. And, you know, as drivetrain parts, we exclusively use Moser Engineering axle components and Tremec transmissions and McLeod dual disc clutches and Dynotech drive shafts. In 10 years of owning our business and testing vehicles like that to almost a military standard, I have had one clutch fail And it didn't come from McLeod. It came from a supplier that supplied us a McLeod clutch. And ultimately, it was that they had pulled the wrong clutch disc off the shelf and sent us one that was spec'd out to a lower horsepower than what we had spec'd out.
Right, right.
And I should say that McLeod saw that happen and said, send it back to us, and they sent us the correct part for free. So...
Well, again, outstanding customer service. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize it, but mass-produced vehicles are just that. They're mass-produced vehicles, and typically OE parts, including paint, those parts and components are designed for minimum tolerances and to barely outlast the warranty. So, you know, that's why when somebody, you know, wants a car built, they go to somebody like you and they go to the aftermarket for quality components that match the style of their doing. And I don't know, it's the aspect of quality, and this bleeds back into military spec, the aspect of quality has to be factored into a build, and that costs money. It just does, and it costs time. And as you guys know, time is money. And you know, so guys that are listening to this, the reason I'm babbling about this is because, you know, there's smack on the internet, and people say, oh, it's a $100,000 car, it's a checkbook car, it's this or it's that. There is a perception that the parts grow on trees, and high end components are expensive to buy and they're specially built. And you know, I just think that people lose sight of that sometimes, which leads me to a question about style. We talked about style and trends and things like that. I'm just going to ask a question and let you go on it. And, you know, and I'm not here to bash on anybody and their style or their taste or anything like that. There's a room for everybody. But what do you guys think about rat rods? Giant silent pod. I love it. The Rolodex is flipping, and the politically correct answer is floating to the top. Go ahead.
Well, I don't know if you know it or not, but Kevin and I are in the Chrome Czars Motor Club, and our club was responsible for the 100-car pileup, which was a pretty massive traditional hot rod show for 10 years here in Illinois. And one of the things that we tried to do with that show was really get people to bring out their traditional cars. And as kind of the rat rod thing started coming into popularity, that changed a little bit. My 36 would have been considered a rat rod by the Gray Baskerville division definition years ago. But somewhere along the line, the rat rods evolved into basically art cars. You know, they're taking they're taking the shittiest body they can find and the, you know, most ugly grease-encrusted 350 that they can find and slapping it into a frame and burger welding everything for shock value. And as an artist, you know, that's cool. You know, I'm all for expressing your creativity. But as a car builder, it's not what hot rodding's about. You know, nobody built cars like that back in the day. And it's not something that... we really want anything to do with.
I understand that because there's a responsibility and a safety aspect, and I get it as a trend, and some of the stuff has been really creative, and like you say, from an artistic standpoint, I dig it, but I've seen some cars rolling down the street that probably shouldn't be on the street, and that's all I'm going to say. And for me, the traditional hot rod route is respecting our forefathers and the people that came before us, and as well as bringing new design elements in, and it's a respectful thing. And in a sense, I guess rat rod is, but I'm personally. I'm kind of glad to see it, I'm not going to say going away, but morphing into maybe blending a little bit more with traditional hot rodding.
The thing I think you could directly make a relationship between what rat rodding has been and the And a couple of factors, you know, the instant gratification that seems to be rampant in our country today, the everybody's a winner attitude where you get a trophy no matter what you do. You know, I think all of those things are coming into play with somebody building a rat rod. What I would like to see people that are building a rat rod, what I would like to see the end result of that being is more of a resurgence of an interest in car culture and putting hands on your own vehicle and building it, but driving people to realize that it's a learning experience and it's only going to be as nice as you are desirous of it to be. And if you want it to be really nice, you might build a rat rod, and that may be your gateway into the car culture. And hopefully that will cause you to be around other people and read articles and maybe take a welding class at the local college and really kind of do the things that guys did back in the 50s and 60s, where if they didn't know how to do something, they went and found someone that did. And that may be hiring a shop like ours, but it may be getting a buddy and making a friend or joining a car club. And there's another guy in the club that's a welder and another guy that's a machinist. And
exactly.
Yeah, you maybe have a skill that comes out of you that involves sheet metal work, and pretty soon you've got a car club and you're building each other's cars together.
Well, and then your own personal skill set grows. And, you know, an analogy and a comparison I like to use all the time is that there is no difference technically between a Mako paint job and a Bobby Alloway paint job. And I mean, no offense to either one of those people. The difference is in the execution. And you guys know what I'm talking about. It's the same technology, mechanical or chemical bond. That's the only way paint sticks. It's the follow through. And it's the artistry involved that differentiate the Mako paint job from the Bobby Alloway paint job or the Trepanier or Charlie Hutton or you guys. Or, you know, it's the level of give a shit. It's the level of want to. And that can be learned. It can be learned and passed on. And Kevin, there's a quote on your about page. I'm going to paraphrase. It's, "I'm always learning. I'm far from a master at metalcraft." And I think that's so humble, because you guys arguably are masters at what you do. My question to you is this. What would you say to somebody that's just getting started in this field and maybe is a little bit intimidated by some of the high-end stuff that's out there and thinking, man, it's going to take me 25 years to get there? What would you tell somebody that's just thinking about getting started in our hobby or this industry that maybe can empower them?
Well, you know, going to a local car show and maybe asking, you know, taking a look at cars and asking around, maybe look to guys that did the work on the car themselves, looking for that local car club. And there are plenty of car clubs that are really kind of only the car club that just the guys get together for breakfast and then they go sit in a lawn chair behind their car. But there are plenty of car clubs that are working on each other's cars in a garage, and you can learn from that avenue. If you don't have that or you're not interested in that, I actually don't recommend going to the big box schools, as it were. Every community college has a welding class. You know, think really about what skills do I need to do the part of the car that I want to do. You know, we had classes in our shop over the winter called Hot Rod 101 years ago, and we just got too busy to do it anymore, and it's actually kind of a shame. But we didn't teach you how to weld. We taught you how to lay out your chassis and take measurements to build your own chassis or to modify like a Model A chassis. I think the biggest thing that I tried to impart in that class was you can buy that MIG welder from Eastwoods and tack everything together, but either go take a welding class and actually learn how to weld, or tack it all together and come to somebody like our shop, or go to the Roadster shop, or find a local welding shop and get them to do all the finish welding on it, because ultimately you're going to put your son or your wife in the car with you, or you're going to be on the highway and there's a minivan full of nuns behind you, whatever. You want it to be safe. And it's not that the information isn't out there to learn. A Hot Rod 101 class like the one that we taught, Pete and Jake's has a wonderful section of their catalog that teaches you about steering and front suspension geometry. And in a very few pages, there's plenty of books that can be read. There's YouTube videos. But maybe ultimately, put your chassis together or build your car, but be just honest with yourself. I don't know how to do this, but I need to learn, or I don't know how to do this, and I need to go hire someone that does. Because ultimately, you want your car to be very enjoyable. And Eastwoods has plenty of books and manuals in their book section, correct?
And DVDs as well.
Right. Yeah, DVDs. There's four ways of learning things, right? You can watch somebody else do it, you can read it, you can mimic someone, or you can be instructed by someone. And pick which way works the best for you, and just be honest about it, and seek out that manner in learning. If you have to go to a college and take a class, and really kind of think about what you're doing. If you're going to make some sheet metal parts for your car, do you really need to go to one of the big box schools to learn sheet metal, or can you go to the local college and take a sculpture class?
Exactly.
The same thing, but I definitely encourage a lot of things. Watch the videos, read the manuals, maybe go to the local high school for continuing education or the local college and have a professional instructor. I've been asked to teach people how to weld, and I usually say I can't teach you how to TIG weld in a weekend. It doesn't work that way. But if you're going to learn something technical like that, you really need a master welder or a professor at a college that is able to look at how you're welding and make sure you're doing it the right way. Because when I was in college up in Alaska for welding technologies, our instructor told us that you can make a beautiful looking weld that's not a weld at all.
Yeah, there's a thing, it's a saying that is there's no such thing as self-instructing. You don't have the third person perspective on what you're doing. You cannot self-analyze. And to a point you can, and that's an arguable statement, but what you're saying is exactly what I believe, in that you have to reach out and you have to, like you said, be honest and understand that there's no shame in saying, hey, I don't know how to do that. Who would I talk to about learning? Who can teach me this? And these are internal questions to ask. And from that point, once you get the fundamentals, it's just doing the work, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And that's a big problem we've had with a lot of kids coming out of, the famous schools, is that they've taught them a little bit about everything, but they don't come out specialized. And with a few outstanding examples or exceptions, a lot of those kids don't really have the work ethic. And we've discussed this with other shop owners, other people in the industry, and the kids today coming out of school, I guess they're growing up differently than we did. Kevin and I both grew up in rural areas. I grew up on a farm, and you had to work. And we have, and particularly with Kevin's military background, you put your nose to the grindstone and you work. And a lot of the kids today, they just don't understand that, and that's a big problem with our industry right now.
Well, I agree, and it's one of my missions that I hope to stand on somebody's rooftop and shout the fact that you can make a good living as a skilled tradesman. You just have to remind yourself, and we have to get back in the mindset in this country that you can be a successful person without a college degree. You can, as long as there's no shame in getting your hands dirty. And part of that is that work ethic. And when I've hired people in the different shops that I've had or managed or whatever, the first thing I hand somebody is a broom. And that evaluates them for me. And you know what I'm talking about. If they know how to operate that device, then from a mental and a physical perspective, I can probably work with that person. So I'm hoping that shifts, that switches back around, because everything's on a pendulum. And I don't know, but I think there's hope. I'm an eternal optimist. I think there's hope in our industry for that. And it seems like you guys have as much passion about passing these skills on as I do and as the Eastwood Company does. And having said that, you're not far from the Eastwood facility in Chicago, right?
Just about 10 miles, I think.
10 miles. God bless. That's great. What I would like to do is, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but the Eastwood store in Chicago, there is a classroom environment that's built into the store. Eastwood believes very strongly in the educational aspect of selling, of teaching you how to use what they sell. So I'm going up there in August to do some a workshop over the weekend, and we're going to do some fun stuff. But I would like to formally invite you guys down somehow, some way, to bring some of your vehicles and I don't know, man. Let's brainstorm. Let's put on a class. Let's put on not a welding class, but let's do something fun like that. What do you think?
I'm more than happy to do that, Kevin. I've actually been because of the quite frankly epidemic of a lack of skilled tradesmen in our industry that spans from the engine builders and you know the welders. Moroso is constantly looking for welders. To upholstery guys and body shops that do paint and chassis builders and sheet metal workers and electricians for wiring cars. It's really kind of become an epidemic. And pretty much inspired by Mike Rowe's campaign to get America working again and get parents and guidance counselors to realize that you can make a good living, and if anybody's read Shotcraft is Soulcraft, and if you hadn't, you should, to realize that you can have a very fulfilled life in working with your hands and your mind every day, and it's not you're just a stupid welder. It's a very technical field, and when you add being a fabricator on top of that, it becomes a monumental amount of information and skill that you have to have. And
and something you can truly, truly take pride in, right?
Right. Yeah. I've been selected to be on a SEMA task force to actually address this problem. And I'll be working with. I haven't seen the actual number of other people on the task force, but. I'm sure it'll be an appropriate number of people from a wide variety of the types of skills that are required in the industry to just try and figure out a 3, 5, and 10 year program to address this, because it really is from coast to coast in Canada to Mexico that we have all these people that are out of work and we have. Lots of people with excellent minds and good hands. It's how to put them in the right place and get them going in our industry and fill all these jobs that are needed. And I would be more than happy, and I know Chad would too, to come down to the Eastwood facility here in Chicago and teach a class or just give a seminar. We can talk about that in the coming weeks. And get something going. I'd be very interested in that.
Well, let's keep our minds on that, man. I think that would be cool stuff. And I'll talk to my peeps at Eastwood about this and see if we can get some going. At the very least, you guys can bring some of your cars down and show them off, and we'll get some people out there for you. But I wanted to thank you guys, Kevin Tully and Chad Hill with Hot Rod Chassis and Cycle, Addison, Illinois. If you're up in the area, go see the shop. Go and talk to them. If you want work done, well, you're going to get outstanding work from these cats. And thank you guys so much. It's stretched out much longer, and I apologize for it taking time, but you guys are really fun to talk to, and we appreciate you taking the time. Through my life, there have been people that have helped me for no reason other than they're kind people, but there's mentors that I've had. There's people that have helped me. Have you guys got anybody that you'd like to give a shout-out to or a special thanks to?
Almost certainly. I would have to say that all the people in the industry that we've met, you end up having a beer with these guys or talking with them on the phone about more than just the industry. And they all, once they meet us and know who we are, and it becomes more of a relationship than just the industry aspect, Nate Toby and Jesse Powell and Jeff Anderson and a dear friend of mine that just passed away, Lenny Hughes,
who unfortunately wasn't able to pass on any of his extensive ignition and magneto knowledge to an apprentice. You know, those guys, they've always believed in us. Josh Russell from Now Potential, he used to work for Ray Bestas, and our, of course, Chad and I's wives, who put up with all the late nights and going away to the shows and talking on the phone during dinner and, you know, all the things that a small business person ends up experiencing. My mom.
Of course.
Yeah, and my parents were really instrumental in where I'm at. You know, I worked on the farm with my uncle and my dad, and so I really got an appreciation for the old technology, because when 1960 hit our farm, time stopped. So I grew up in the 80s in a farm that was basically 1960. So that combined with you know, the old cars, working on with my dad, my mom taught me how to draw, and you know, they really kind of put me on this path to where I am today.
I think it probably, I would have to say that it speaks volumes that, as we hear O'Hare going over,
yeah.
I think it speaks volumes about, you know, how our story as a shop, and Chad and I as people, and all the guys that have worked or currently work for us, you know, we're this tiny little shop in the Midwest, in a town that's known for racing, so there's tons of other shops around us that do phenomenal work. And you know, pretty much everybody we've met, you know, yourself, and you know, we get to meet some of our legendary guys that we just hold in high esteem, like Ed Iskandarian. You know, Chad was at SEMA a few years ago and saw Pete Chaporis and Alex Vidia standing at the dinner that he was at, and walked over and just wanted to say hi and meet him in person. And in meeting them, they knew who we were. You know,
wow.
It's totally bizarre when that happens, and you're almost taken aback. And to have those kind of people know who you are, and then, you know, in the conversation make statements like, you guys do awesome work, keep doing what you're doing. You know, ultimately it starts with your parents or your older brother or whatever telling you that you're doing awesome and keep plugging along. But all of those people have a huge influence on you too, because when there's bills to pay, or the, you know, electricity goes out and you can't work for a day because of the storm that just happened or something like that, you think about those people telling you to keep plugging along, and it does. It keeps you going.
And let's face it, this is not an easy thing to do, what you do. And I'm not going to compare myself to you. I've built some cars, but I've been in this industry a long time as a technician. And it ain't easy, folks, but it's definitely worth it. And again, I wanted to thank you guys for spending the time today and sharing of yourselves and your skills and some of the philosophy behind Hot Rod Chassis and Cycle. And keep on doing the stuff, man. Keep on encouraging other people to do it as well. And I can't wait to see some of these cars and show the rest of the world some of these cars that you guys have built out at the SEMA show.
We really appreciate you having us on, Kevin. And you know, we look forward to coming down to Eastwood with, we can probably bring a Cosmic Outcast down, and maybe we'll try to round up a couple of the other local cars that we've built, and bring a couple down, a couple free down.
Yeah, I'll try to bring my dad's, well, it's mine now, but the 36 Ford that my dad bought when he was in high school.
Oh, cool. Cool stuff. Cool. Well, guys, thanks. So much can be seen on the website. Go to hotrodchassisandcycle.com. Look at some of the stuff that these guys have done. And if you're in the Chicago area or the Midwest, it's worth the trip down there. Nice guys. They'll talk your ear off, obviously. But thanks again, guys, and we will connect soon. Until the next time, don't forget, check us out online, eastwood.com. And there's all kinds of contests going on. going on. We're giving away free stuff. And if I ask your question on the air that you email into to shoptalk@eastwood.com, you get a $25 gift certificate. And that's pretty cool stuff. So thanks for listening to Shop Talk. I'm Kevin Tates, and we are brought to you by the Eastwood Company. Do the job right with Eastwood.